Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, my returning guest is Jennifer Taylor Skinner. She's the host of the award-winning podcast, The Electorate. And we're going to be talking about all the crap that's going on right now. Something I haven't done for a while, but I'm kind of getting back into it before we get started. The Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Jennifer Taylor Skinner. Welcome back to the show, Jennifer.
Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And, you know, just FYI, everybody, we have some feedback issues that I'm not sure if they're going to be, you know, I just heard a little thing, but I'm going to try to get rid of them if I hear them, but I'm not going to get rid of all of them. So there's the first thing. The second thing is last night I swallowed the wrong way and I had this major coughing fit. And ever since then, I've like had to cough a lot. So I'm going to try. If I have to cough, I'm going to get rid of it if I can. But just FYI. So I apologize.
Oh, no. Are you okay?
I'm fine. It's just that, you know how like when you do that thing where you swallow the wrong way and then it's like, oh, my God. And Bob was on John Fugelsang's show last night. And I was out in the living room, which is like connected to his office. So I have my episode, right, where I swallow something the wrong way and I start coughing. And I thought he was finished talking to John. And so I just start coughing like crazy. And then all of a sudden he starts talking again. I'm like, oh shit. And so, you know, I go into the other room and I'm coughing and everything. Fortunately, Bob said he didn't hear me. So I don't know if people of the John Fugelsang show heard me coughing last night, but if so, I apologize if you're listening to this. But anyway, yeah, so there's just all kinds of crazy shit going on, you know. Well, I guess it's just a sign of the times, right?
Sign of the times. I mean, I have a similar problem in my house because the room that I record in, the next room over, mm-hmm. is the bathroom, right? So I have to remind people, don't flush.
Yeah, right.
When I'm recording, because arguably that's worse than coughing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to hear the flushing.
No.
And yes, I do hear a little feedback from time to time. So I'm just sorry, everybody. This is. And I just have to say, last week we canceled the show because I got a new iPhone and I record all my shows on the phone. I just have the system. I can't even explain it. Bob did it for me. And it's a soundboard. And there's this little thing that connects the soundboard to my computer, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a thing that I can plug my phone in. So obviously I needed a new adapter and for my new phone. So we got that taken care of. But of course, you know, we had ordered it on Wednesday and it was supposed to show up on Wednesday and it didn't, I think, show up until Friday. And then now we, you know, there's something about when I call you, my phone was asking me, you know, like something about headphones or other device. And I hit other device and it didn't work. So we're using Bob's phone right now and he hit headphones and it worked. So, I mean, this is all technical bullshit that no one cares about, but I'm just explaining to everybody like, oh my God, there's issues all over the place. So we're just going to have to power through these issues that we're having and get to the good stuff. And okay, we are going to talk about what's going on, but I want to say a couple of things first. I have decided, you know, that this, I don't know exactly where I'm going to take this show. I've talked to celebrities before and just had fun conversations. Obviously, the primary focus has been political, and this show will continue to have the political slant, although I know from time to time I will continue to be talking to, you know, whether it's a celebrity or just a regular person about something, I don't know. But it's difficult for me to talk about politics right now, not so much because of my emotional state, but because I feel that I'm filled with doom. And all I'm going to do is talk about the doom. And I don't know that everybody wants to hear that, although today I have lined up a bunch of things that, you know, I think we can do. But still, I have decided that I, for the past 5 years, and I'm just making this announcement now, I'm not going to talk about it on the show per se, but for the past 5 years, I've been studying near-death experiences and intentional manifesting. So I am going to do a podcast. I don't know when it's going to begin, but it's going to be a Substack thing, and I will do a podcast connecting intentional manifesting to near-death experiences, what I've heard people say about when they've had those experiences and how we manifest. But I'm also going to talk about other things, more than life, more to life than meets the eye type stuff. And it's been an interest of mine for so long, and this is the perfect time for me to start, you know, getting this going, because I'm just not in love with what's happening to our country right now, and I'm not sure of my place in it anymore and what I can do. So I don't know what I'm going to do with this show in the long run. It's not going away anytime soon, but you know, in a year from now, I don't know where it's going to be, but I am going to be doing this new show. I don't know when it's going to start. I've got to get everything organized first, and I think I'm going to record a few shows prior to even putting everything out there. So I'm just, you know, letting everyone know I'm going in that direction. And for those of you who listen to my Patrons Only show, you've heard me talking about this stuff for years now. It's just going to be a little bit more organized. So anyway, there's my big announcement. and I also just want to ask you, before we start talking about politics, because this is the first time that we've really talked since the election. And, you know, you and I had a private discussion about it, and I was, you know, very upset. And I'm not telling everybody some of the things that are going on behind the scenes that are kind of weighing on me outside of the election, although they're connected to it. But I've found a couple ways to, you know, deal with and cope, excuse me, you know, with what's going on. So I wanted to ask you, like, what are you doing? Obviously, this has been hard for all of us, and we all have our own individual experiences with this. But like, what are you doing to stay sane these days?
Wow. I don't know. I think I'm disappearing into Christmas, right? I'm disappearing into the holidays, right? Yeah. I have kids, you know, so Santa is a big topic of discussion. Christmas trees, ornaments, and things like that. I mean, I guess, you know, I haven't quite placed it. And I'm in a similar position to you in that, you know, we both do a podcast, you know, dealing with politics. Mm-hmm. And it's just been really, really hard to think of ways to talk about this moment. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest reasons is because we don't really know what's in store.
Yeah.
We know it's going to be bad. We don't know how bad it's going to be. And it's really hard to do any kind of analysis about this landscape right now. And, you know, more power to the people who can come up with something to talk about every week. But this has been really, really hard for me, right? Mm-hmm. Because we know, first of all, just as an example, someone wanted to talk about the abortion landscape. Right. And what we do know is that women are dying. Mm-hmm. We know that women are being denied care and in emergency rooms. And, you know, I'm sorry to go from Christmas to this.
I know.
But I just, without knowing how we're going to solve this, it's just really, really hard to know how to navigate this discourse. But anyway, so how I'm dealing with it, I'm baking brownies and cheesecakes and buying lots of stuff.
Oh my, you know, it's funny. I had a bit of a pivot on Thanksgiving, and I think it was like the first, my poor father, you know, when this all happened, I just didn't even know what to talk about. Because I have had this interest in, I hate calling it the occult. I hate all the fucking new age language that surrounds all this stuff. I really hate it because people have preconceived notions. But, you know, I've always been interested in this. But in the, like I said, in the last 5 years, I've just been so focused on it. And it's been fascinating. It's been, you know, I don't even like to say journey because it sounds so over, like everyone always uses that term, but that's all I got is the words that we can describe it. When I would talk to my father though, it's like, I would talk about politics all the time. And then, you know, I mean, of course we would talk about other things. We would talk about his dog and family issues and all this, but after the election, it was like, I just couldn't talk about anything. And then it was like, I can't talk to my dad about all this spiritual stuff because he's just not interested. And he has, although I have to say, he has been listening to me because I'm like, I'm telling him about this new podcast that I'm doing. And, you know, he's kind of forced to listen to me. And it's sweet that he is because I know he doesn't buy into any of it. And I don't sell it to him. I'm not trying to convince him of anything. I'm just explaining to him what I'm going through and what I think. So, yeah, I didn't know how to talk to anybody. It was just awful. And I had a rock in my stomach every single fucking day. And then we had to go to Thanksgiving and it was at my dad's house. So, you know, my dad is remarried. He's got two grown children and they always invite my mom, which is very sweet. So my mom came and then my sister's husband's father came. And, you know, it was like we weren't allowed to, nobody wanted to talk about politics. Everybody was liberal, thankfully, and no one talked about politics. So that day it was nice and it was kind of easy and it just kind of lifted me out of that real depression that I was in. I mean, it's still there, like the fear and the unknown and all of that is there. But, and then also the manifesting stuff that I'm working on helps me because it gives me coping skills. It's helping me cope, really. And, you know, I mean, it's not to say that I'm going to manifest a perfect life and I'm going to manifest away this election. Of course I can't. That's ridiculous. But, you know, the idea that I have been able to find these coping skills to get through difficult moments, because there's all these other difficult moments that are happening outside of what's happening in the election, just in my personal life. And, you know, I mean, I can't talk about those things, but it's a number of them. So it's like so stressful and so overwhelming. And like you, I've, you know, I decorated for Christmas and I always make the effort to notice that, you know, like I look at my mantle, I look at my tree. I like to kind of take that in and feel good about it. I've been watching. Do you like watch any particular shows or anything like that? Because I've been watching The Sopranos again.
Crime shows, which are lighter and, you know, like lighter than this political moment right now. They're actually lifting my spirits.
I'm watching The Sopranos and I'm like, oh my God, The Sopranos are going to be running the country, except it's going to be the stupid Sopranos. I'd rather have Tony Soprano running the country than Donald Trump. So, it's like, I have been enjoying that. And then I've just, you know, I've been putting my focus on the things that I enjoy. I'm trying to focus on things that make me feel good, because the things that don't make me feel good send me into fear spirals that I just can't deal with right now. So I just can't deal with it.
So. Yeah, well, I'm very happy for you for this direction. And I'm also happy for me because and it was unfortunate to hear you say that you couldn't manifest a new president-elect, because that was what I was going to ask you for. I thought that we were going in that direction. You're going to teach us how to manifest a new president-elect.
I wish.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen.
Although, you know, what's interesting is that I have a friend who right before the election said she had this dream. And I mean, it's just a dream, but she had this dream that Donald Trump was talking to her, but he wasn't the human version of himself. He was kind of more like the soul version. So not the horrible version that he is as a soul, as a human. And that he was talking to her and saying, you know, I think it's time for me to go. I've done enough damage here. And I think I'm going to go now. And then he died, but she said when she woke up, it was kind of like she got the feeling that when he died, it was like 6 months. Now, I don't know if this is a prescient dream, and this was before the election. So I don't know if this is some kind of prescient dream, but, you know, Christopher Boozy, I had him on, I think it was not the week of the election, it was the following week. But he predicted, and not to say that, you know, I mean, I know he predicted Kamala was going to win. A lot of people did, and he was wrong, and I was wrong, and we were all wrong about that. But he doesn't think that Donald Trump is going to actually get sworn in. And then, you know, and then he's like, well, and if he does get sworn in, I don't think he's going to last. And I have to say, just on some gut level, I don't think he's going to last this 4 years. I mean, he might, but I feel like what's going against him is the fact that, number one, he's clearly not in great health. I know he could still go on to live for like 15 years or something. You know, it doesn't mean that he's not in great health, that he's on the path to death. But there's also the idea of the 25th Amendment. You know, I know Russia still has a vested interest in keeping him as president, but at the same time, they don't really need him because, you know, Peter Thiel and J.D. Vance and all those people can also be manipulated by Putin. So I'm not exactly sure where Putin is as far as where he feels about Donald Trump. But I don't know that Donald Trump is going to last this full 4 years. I mean, and I don't know if that is better or worse for us. I don't know.
It's hard to say. Not hard to say about whether he will last. I mean, I think the writing's on the wall there. I mean, I was just looking at, I guess he was giving an interview this week, and his makeup is just getting darker and darker, and I don't know what he's covering up. But I mean, you know, in all honesty, there's something going on with his health, I think. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I think we can conclude that, you know, safely. But I agree with you. I mean, I don't know how much in favor he is with Putin right now. But I think that it's probably more worrying if someone like J.D. Vance were to take the mantle as president. J.D. Vance, of course, could never be elected president on his own because he has no charisma. No one really likes him, right? So, you know, he's more dangerous because he's younger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's younger, and then he's also the puppet of Thiel. And, you know, it's the Broligart class. I mean, Jess Piper tweeted, I'm not going to say tweeted. I guess it's skeeted, but I hate the fucking skeet thing.
Blue sky.
But she said it's really not left versus right. It's a class war, the billionaires versus the rest of us. And that's the truth. I mean, I think that's what the billionaire class bought all the power. They bought the Supreme Court. You know, they've purchased the presidency, and we're seeing right now, unfortunately. Okay, so here's the first thing I want to talk to you about, because this is the thing that's really fucking bothering me. You know, we're hearing about a resistance, but who should be part of this resistance? I mean, there's you and me, okay, and we only have a very limited amount of power. And then there are the Democrats, and then there's the press. And unfortunately, what I'm seeing from the press is really making me uncomfortable, because we all know about Joe and Mika going down to Mar-a-Lago, kissing the ring of Donald, and then scolding everybody for being upset about it. And then just most recently, Time Magazine is going to name him Person of the Year, which I recognize is not necessarily a positive. It's just somebody who's had the most influence. I know Hitler was Person of the Year, but it still sends this message. And then at the same time, he's going to be ringing, I don't know what day, but he'll be ringing, you know, the stock market bell. So we're seeing, and Christopher Wray is leaving the FBI, and I'm seeing a lot of obeying in advance, and legacy media is kind of, not everyone, but what worries me is, okay, like while Lawrence O'Donnell isn't necessarily going to obey in advance, the CEO of MSNBC is okay with fascism. And so he is the one who's deciding what can be discussed and what can't be. So there's going to be omission. It's not lying per se, but what they're not saying and what they're not reporting on is also anti-democratic. And so I'm wondering how you're feeling about that. And then also, here's a big question about it. Do you like, where do you see hope?
Yeah, that's where do I see hope? I see hope at the bottom of a cheesecake pan. That's the only place I'm seeing hope right now.
Yeah.
But So here's my problem, and I haven't really listened to mainstream media, cable news media.
Me neither.
Since election night, right? Same, a lot of people have said that. You know, but I would assume, because you can kind of see what's filtering through mainstream media and what's filtering through cable news on social media. What I haven't seen them talk about is Donald Trump's plans for disinformation. There is a page on his website, on his, you know, campaign website, you know, the Vance Trump website, about disinformation. He says on that page that either the first day of his administration or either the first week of his administration, essentially he would criminalize the labeling of disinformation and misinformation, right? Mm-hmm. He wouldn't criminalize disinformation and misinformation, but labeling disinformation and misinformation, right? What kind of position is that going to put the media in, right? Because Donald Trump is a walking disinformation and misinformation machine. If we can't counter the narratives and the lies that are coming out of this administration as people in the media, as podcasters, as people in independent media, if we can't counter that without fear of being jailed, right? Mm-hmm. Where can we go? So that's how I feel about that. And also Elon Musk has said something similar on Twitter, right? He said, you know, if I think this happened a couple of weeks ago, he tweeted something to the effect of, if you're thinking about talking about Russian influence and those in lies, the full force of the law would be brought down on you. Right. So where does that leave us as people who are truth tellers and people who, you know, I mean, for lack of a better word, people who want to resist this incoming administration? I think we're kind of all in a trap. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why you and I, you know, can't really figure out a way to talk about what's happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's the calm before the storm. He's not president yet. And like you said earlier, we can only just guess at what's about to come. I mean, there could be the idea. I think that if he's ever going to get to a point where they're like jailing people for talking out about the government, it's clearly going to start with people like Liz Cheney and, you know, big names, and then it will trickle down to smaller independent podcasters. I think there's also the idea that, as opposed to maybe jailing podcasters, there would be the threat of, you know, audits, things like that, making your life terrible. I don't know how this is all going to turn out. And it's like, really, it's really scary because, okay, now this is going to bring me to, see, this is why I'm afraid to do this podcast, because I just go right to doom. And I don't know how you're feeling about this, but basically, you know, Rachel Bitticoffer is telling everybody, you know, we are fucked. And if you think we're going to have elections that are fair from this point on, you're crazy. And I understand that. You know, Donald Trump just said, we're going to have to take a look at elections. And then, you know, the narrative on that was same day voting, voter ID, all that shit that they always talk about.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're talking about nefarious people who have really dark plans, you know, they may just mask their intentions with, same day voting, voter ID, but, you know, maybe it's going to be a different kind of cheating or a different kind of manipulation of our voting system. I know our voting system is state by state, so there is that. But I mean, I don't feel confident that we're ever going to have free and fair elections as long as I'm alive. And I'm wondering where you are on that.
Well, you know, that's the problem. We don't really know how seriously to take any of these claims. I mean, the only barometer we have is 2016. Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that he did in 2016 during his first month in office, he didn't announce on the campaign trail, mm-hmm. right? We had no idea that they were coming, like mm-hmm. the Muslim ban. We had no idea.
Yeah.
He just didn't, right? He didn't announce that he was going to do family separation,
yeah.
right? So if we're using 2016 as a barometer, things will probably be a lot worse than he's announced. Right?
Right.
Publicly, that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And the second thing, and this is something that I wanted to talk about in relation to some other stories that were happening, you know, in the news this week, in the news cycle this week. We haven't had free and fair elections since forever.
Well, you're right. Yeah.
We haven't had them forever. And I'm prepared to talk about that if you want, because I've been thinking about that a lot this week.
Yes.
In relation to, you know, what's really happening with progress. And it's, you know, anyway.
Go for it.
Well, it's in the context. I don't know if you wanted to talk about the Universal Healthcare CEO.
Yeah.
And Luigi Mangione the suspect in that case. I'll let you open this. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, the only thing that I'll say is I don't like the idea that people are turning him into a folk hero, or because, you know, I've seen some things of like women joking that they want to date him. And I've seen that on feminist pages and accounts. I totally get because of this murder, this civilian vigilante murder, which I do not believe in. There has been a lot of attention on how the insurance industry is killing us, you know? So I posted on Blue Sky, I think it was on Sunday. And, you know, I don't know that I was the first person to say it, but I know that some people privately emailed me and said, thank you for saying this. You know, I haven't been seeing it out there. And then after I said it, I saw a lot more people saying it. So I don't know if I helped make some people feel comfortable. I don't know. But regardless, it was like, okay, well, when the right put Kyle Rittenhouse up as this big hero, you know, we were all appalled. And then now I'm seeing, you know, from the left, people are making him into a hero. And, you know, I've said this on my patrons only show, but even though I haven't seen this film, I saw in the trailer of the film Suffragette that, you know, the women had bottles and they would, you know, put cloth in it and light it on fire and then throw it into a building. And this man was talking to this one woman and he goes, you know, you're being violent. And she said, violence is the only language you understand. And so I think that when any group of people, and I don't care who, I mean, you can say group of people can literally fall into the category of, you know, people who have insurance. So any group of people who are either being oppressed or taken advantage of, or if they're dying or whatever, and they can't make their voices heard in a legal way, it's kind of human nature. It's psychology. Whether you think it's right or wrong, that they're going to fight back and they're going to be violent. And so I think that's what happened. I think that this man, although if he were a black man who wasn't attractive, I don't know if people would be turning him into a folk hero. I don't know. I just don't think we should hero worship him, but we can absolutely see the benefit from what happened, from the tragedy.
Right. Right. So and you took me exactly where I wanted to go, right? Who has the right in this country, or who feels they have the right to use violence for their own means, right? Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that in the context of the Voting Rights Act, because I've talked about this before, probably on your show. In 2013, the case Shelby County versus Holder, it basically gutted the Voting Rights Act, right? And since then, I guess in the past 9 years, over 100,000 voting centers in Democratic counties and Democratic areas and black neighborhoods have been closed. Mm-hmm. Over 100,000 voting centers have been closed, right? There have been voter ID laws in over half the states. Voter suppression has been rampant, right? Mm-hmm. And I would argue that voter suppression and the gutting of the Voting Rights Act has been responsible for more death in this country than the health insurance agency. And I make that argument because if people had full access to the ballot, if people could vote without voter suppression, if everyone could vote, if the millions of people, voters, were not disenfranchised by gutting the Voting Rights Act, we could vote for universal health care.
Yeah.
You know, we could vote for gun reform. Gun reform kills more children in this country than cancer, right? We could vote for the George Floyd and Policing Act. We could vote for, you know, a number of things, right? Mm-hmm. And if you take those pieces of legislation that have been blocked by Republicans, and also, you know, healthcare reform, universal healthcare has been blocked by Republicans and the health insurance industry for decades and decades, going all the way back to 1993 when Hillary Clinton tried to pass universal healthcare. They've been blocking that. So I would argue that the Voting Rights Act and not having full protection under the Voting Rights Act is responsible for more deaths than the health insurance industry alone, right? And, you know, connecting this to, you know, Luigi Mangione, if a black activist had enough and said, listen, I'm tired of being disenfranchised, and they went out and they shot a lawmaker or an executive who was responsible for voter suppression, I really doubt that we would be hailing that person as a hero. We wouldn't be talking about how hot they were.
Right.
People would be, you know, they'd be clutching their pearls. This person would be under the jail. And that's my problem. Like, who do we feel has a right to be a vigilante, a right to be violent? And it's always white men who benefit from that. They yes. always, you know, pick up a gun and they say, you know what, I have a right to kill people because of this. And, you know, I could go on about this case. I mean, yeah, I'll just let you. I'm in there.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I mean, I hadn't thought about it in the way that you did, but I'm 100% there with you. And that's also very frightening because we know that moving forward in this administration, they're just going to make it harder and harder and harder for Black people to vote. I do just want to throw this in there that, let me see, Letitia James says she will not drop the civil fraud case against Trump. It's like, she's fucking Black women are the only people, well, I'm not going to say only because Mark Elias is doing it too and he's a white man, but Black women have been like the only people to really hold Trump accountable for his crimes. And at this point, she's not backing down. And when we see all these other people backing down, so I just have to throw that out there. And I say that because she is a Black woman and Black people are being disenfranchised. And, you know, the Republican Party is also, I haven't been seeing too much of it lately. It was right after the election, but it was just all of the, you know, women shouldn't be able to vote crap. And I don't know. I'm kind of going off into a little bit of a tangent here, but somebody made the point that evangelical, you know, primarily Christians, anybody who's evangelical, you will vote for an autocrat because it's like, that's what their religion structure is. And mm-hmm. so they're voting for the same kind of political structure. And, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of crazy ass evangelicals out in the world and out in America, and they're voting, and that's part of it. But, you know, this whole idea of, you're correct, we haven't had a fair, free and fair elections. But like, for instance, in 2022, there was no red wave. In 2020, Joe Biden won. I don't know if we're going to get to a place ever again where that can happen. And I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if it's just because of all of the voter suppression, getting rid of voting centers, if that's it, or if it's legit cheating. I mean, there was all this talk about Elon's Starlink and everything. And I'm not even going to go down conspiracy theory roads on this, only because I feel like it doesn't even matter. It's never going to be investigated. If anything like that happened, we will likely never know. So it's not even to me worth it. And I know that there are people out there who are really like pushing, you know, recounts. It's just not going to happen. Democrats aren't doing it. So it's not going to happen. And, you know, and I'm not even sure what to make of all of it. You know, I just don't even know. I don't know what we're going to see happen in 2026, right? Yeah, 2026. I think for me, that's really going to be a key. If we're going to see, okay, you and I both know, everybody listening to this show knows shit's going to happen in the next 2 years. It's going to be awful. It's going to be pretty swift. And a lot of people, if this tariff thing really happens, people's monthly nut's going to go up by a big amount. There's just going to be a lot we feel. And if that does happen, I would assume there would be some kind of backlash. If they start fucking around with Social Security, if they start fucking around with Medicaid or Medicare, that's when people are going to be like, oh no, we're going to show up now. So in the 26th election, if we see Democrats getting power back in any kind of a way, I might have some hope for 2028, but if we see the American public basically getting raped and fucking pillaged by this administration, and then they win, I'm done. I feel like that's it. The country's over. The American experiment is over. And you know, that said, I have listed here a couple of different, I don't really know where. We haven't seen anything happen yet because they, you know, January 20th is the day he's inaugurated, and then they're going to start things rolling. So we're going to see how Democrats behave. If there's going to be resistance, how is it going to be played out, or how will it play out? But I do know that even though we cannot count on mainstream media, and I'm not anymore, I'm not listening to legacy media. I've heard people online scold me and say, oh, but, you know, it can't go away. And it's like, well, you know, they're just going to, if it, instead of going away, why don't they just fucking improve? You know, they could improve. If they don't do that, I'm not tuning in. I'm not giving the fucking CEO of MSNBC. I know he's getting money because he is still on my cable package, but I'm not going to watch. I'm not going to give them ratings. Anyway, so the people that I trust, and I just want to make a note of this, are Mark Elias, and he, you know, aside from Democracy Docket, which he said, you know, he's not going to bow down. I think that's pretty clear. Mark Elias has a YouTube channel, and I highly recommend people subscribing to his YouTube channel and listening to everything he said. I just listened to a video of his talking about how we can resist, and he said the judiciary is the best hope that we have, although that scares me because the very top of that is Supreme Court, so there's that, but okay, we're not going to talk about that for the minute. But and then there's places like, there's DemCast, D-E-M-C-A ST, yeah. DemCast. They have all kinds of actions that individuals can take. And then there's Indivisible. Again, they have actions. And then if you're going to, there's a couple, and it's women-run magazines, but there's Dame Magazine and Ms. Magazine are doing some really spectacular work now. And I think it's really important for, you know, I, from my understanding, in any kind of fascist scenario, the best resistance or the most effective resistance comes at the very beginning, because once it's entrenched, and then it could literally be decades before we get out of it. But if we are going to have any power here, it's going to happen at the start of this. And so I highly recommend that people, like I said, DemCast, Indivisible, Dame Magazine, Ms. Magazine, Mark Elias, if there's anybody that you think is worthy of noting, you know, there's also the ACLU. Those are the kind of places that are, you can donate to. But I mean, what do you think we can do as individuals? Because we need to, you know, it's great to post a meme, but that's not going to save democracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what do you think we can do?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, the most obvious overlook, the electorate, of course,
the electorate.
You know, I'm still probably the only longest running political podcast that lifts up the voices of women leaders in politics. Right. And that's been my focus since the 2016 election, when people, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, lost in part due to misogyny. So that's always been my focus. But I just wanted to clarify that, just to go back a bit, something you said earlier, that there's a difference between election interference, foreign election interference, and voter suppression, mm-hmm. right? Like, we don't know, we don't have details about any foreign election interference. Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. But there's plenty of evidence, and mm-hmm. you can find this on the Brennan Center, and a lot of people have done research, that gutting of the Voting Rights Act is responsible for the voter suppression we're seeing today, and it's had a real impact on the outcome of our elections, mm-hmm. right? 2016, the year that Hillary Clinton lost, was the first presidential election we had without the full protection of the Voting Rights Act. In 2020, I believe that, you know, Biden won in part because Americans were protected from voter suppression because a lot of people were mailing in their ballots, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter that those voting centers were closed, right? All of those voter suppression measures that have worked in the past for Republicans were kind of, you know, muted or nullified because of the 2020 election and the pandemic. Hmm. That's just my take. That's my mm-hmm. theory about what happened in 2020.
Interesting. It makes sense. Yeah. I mean, also, I think, you know, I mean, I don't know what the deal was with Biden, just kind of side on a little side thing here, but I... You know, the Pod Save America guys had, which I'm not thrilled with them, but they said, and this, take it, you know, for what it's worth, but they had mentioned that they got inside information that I think it was early in the year that showed Biden losing, or I should say Trump winning with like a more than 400 electoral count, and that's where all this started. And I heard from somebody who has inside knowledge and talks to Democratic leaders, and evidently the way it all went down, and I don't know if Joe Biden being a white man, if it would have been enough this time, because there was the whole debate thing, you know, like the concern about his age, and then the constant beating on his age in the press, where they left Donald Trump alone, but they just only paid attention to him. But evidently, the way that it went down was that I think Nancy Pelosi was worried, and she thought that the State of the Union, that the same thing happened in the June debate, was going to happen at the State of the Union, but he happened to be really strong in the State of the Union. So that kind of killed the idea of finding another nominee. And then that is why they had that early debate. We never have debates in June. And it just turned out that, yeah, he gave a really poor performance. And I do remember Joy Reid mentioning, God, it was after the debate, and she said on Juneteenth that there was Juneteenth activists who reported Biden behaving the same way that he behaved at that debate. Of course, later that night, he was okay. But I think what it was he was having, he just goes in and out of kind of being real kind of tired sounding and kind of out of it. And then he would, you know, kind of come back. And so, you know, I mean, that's, I think, why we saw such this, you know, really bothered me to see the way they were going after him. And I guess if that's true, if they did get, if that polling was true, that it was that he was going to lose by such a significant amount, of course I understand why they would want to, you know, get another nominee in. But, you know, I don't want to go over and rehash everything only because I've seen so many people pointing the blame finger, and I feel like that's just, I think the reason why she lost is everything that you just said. It's because the Voting Rights Act was gutted. I mean, do you think if that had not happened, that she might have been able to, well, I know this is just bullshit speculation, but I mean, do you think, I think she would have at least had a better chance of winning.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If we address voter suppression along with disinformation, you know, if we had greater turnout in every demographic in this country, I think that I don't think Democrats would probably lose elections in the near future, right?
Yeah.
I think that it probably would have turned out differently. I mean, we'll have to see what the numbers say, and I don't know if anyone has actually done a deep dive into the numbers from the 2024 election, and I don't even know if we can tease out, this is the problem, I don't even know if we have a way to quantify when people say, you know, voters just stayed home in Michigan this year, right? Did they just stay home because they chose to, or were they prevented from voting?
Right.
Were they prevented from voting from things like voter ID laws? Were they prevented from voting because they were turned away? They didn't have the right ID when they showed up at the poll? Were their polling places closed? Mm-hmm. Were they, you know, subject to disinformation?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't think anyone has collectively quantified all of that information to say how that has affected specifically this election, but the 2022 election, and even, you know, before that, not the 2022 election, but
yeah,
the election before that. So yeah, it's hard to say.
So do you think, okay, now as a Black woman, do you think that moving forward, that it would be imperative that the Democratic Party put up a white man? Because, you know, I mean, you know that argument that I'm saying, like, oh, well, we that'll be the safe route. Do you buy into that?
How many white men have lost their presidential elections in this country's history?
That's true. But it was usually
running white men.
But
right?
it was usually a white man against a white man. So one lost,
it was a
one
white
won.
Man against a white man. But no, yeah, one ever, you know, suggested that we stop running white men whenever they lose.
Exactly.
Or, you know, screw things up in this country.
Yeah. Of course not.
Yeah, but it's, so that's like my answer to that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much of it had to do. I mean, I find with her being a Black woman, a woman and a Black woman, I mean, I find myself now when I go out into the world looking at people, and I don't really want to be doing this, and I'm sure that it'll start to fade, but I start wondering, like, I'll look at someone and think, oh, I don't think you voted for her. I don't think you did it. And I mean, I don't know. There's this one woman, and I hate to say this because it's so fucking judgmental, but yeah, there's a woman who works for the Salvation Army. And she's outside of my grocery store, and she's always, ever since I moved here, she's there every Christmas, and she does a thing where it's like she's dancing, and she, and I don't give to the Salvation Army because I know that they're like the anti-LGBT or something like that. I do give to local homeless charities, but I don't give to that one. And, you know, I always feel like this tinge of guilt that I'm not giving something when I pass by those people. For the Salvation Army. But regardless, with her, so prior to the selection, she just always got on my nerves, and I just feel like such a judgmental bitch. But she does this thing where she's dancing, and then every single time she sees me, and I know she does it to other people, but every single time she sees me, she makes me say hello to her. And you know, and it's like I don't know if it's just because she's a friendly person and she's just trying to spread holiday cheer, and I'm just the curmudgeon who is like, leave me alone. And your dancing is getting on my fucking nerves. But lately, when I look at her, I'm like, I don't think you voted for her. I just like, I shouldn't think that way. And I know it, but I can't help it. I feel like I look at her and I'm like, I know you didn't vote for Kamala. And it just like would not really, I mean, if I were to give to any charity, it would not be based on the person holding, you know, the bucket for me to put money in or whatever. It should not ever be based on that person. And that's not why it has nothing to do with my choice. But at the same time, I feel a little stingy and I feel a little judgmental, but I'm experiencing that. I do want to ask you though, like, are you having that experience when you're going out into the world and you're looking at people, are you kind of looking at them and wondering about their voting, or do you just not even think about that?
No, of course, I think we all are, right? I mean, if the stakes weren't clear in 2016, they were definitely clear in this election, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you think about, you know, hey, millions of people, regardless of what happened with voter suppression or whatever else, you know, caused people to stay home, there were still millions of people mm-hmm. who cast their vote for him, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I live in Seattle, and so there's lots of wealth in Seattle. There's lots of Teslas, there's lots of, you know, Porsches, there's lots, you know, there are a few Cybertrucks here and there. And so now when I drop my kids off at school and I see a parent, you know, pull up in a Tesla, I can't help but think, like, did you? You know what I mean? Because, you know, he will benefit people who are wealthy. And, this, mm-hmm. you know, this town is full of wealthy people, especially if it's a man, you know, a white man. I think, you know, like, I know you didn't vote for her. Right. And it's hard. I mean, I don't know what to say about it, but it's really hard. And it's one of the things that's like, you know, not helpful in having political discourse right now.
Exactly. It's not. And it's just, I hate that this is, I mean, of course I thought the same thing, you know, in Trump's first term. Mainly what I was afraid of, because I am a white woman and I don't know that I have any kind of indication in how I present myself that someone would say, oh, she's a Trump supporter. I mean, I think, you know, there was this white woman who was at my grocery store prior to the election, and she was wearing a Trump pin. She was an older, she clearly looked like she was a wealthy woman. I don't know if she was wealthy, but she looked wealthy. And, you know, with her clothes and the way she presented herself, and she was pretty old. And, you know, and she had this Trump supporting pin on, and I was just like, oh my God. you know, but my concern in his first term was that people were going to assume I was a Trump supporter. And I didn't want that, you know, just because I'm a white woman. And, you know, I remember I went into, I never say this right, and I wish I should just write it down and fucking memorize it. But I went into Best Buy, and there was, is it a shake or a chic? I think it's a shake.
Yeah.
And he was helping me, and I was always so taken with this, because, you know, I was like, okay, here's what I need, and I'm doing a podcast. He goes, oh, what kind of podcast are you doing? And I said, well, it's political. And then I immediately told him I'm a liberal. just didn't want him to think I was a Trump supporter. And it was so sad what happened after that, because he so very quickly started to justify his existence and justify that, you know, he thought America was that, you know, what is it, the light on the hill and all that, and the beacon, I can't remember the terminology, but you know what I'm talking about. He was basically telling me, it's almost like he was convincing me, look, I really love America, I really love America. And it's like, dude, I don't have a problem with you, You know, that's why I told you I'm liberal, because I don't want you to think that I'm being racist or I'm a racist person having racist thoughts about you. And it's, you know, I never had that experience prior to Donald Trump. I never worried that people thought that I was one of those white women who would vote for Republicans. It just never even occurred to me until Donald Trump. And now, so that happened in, you know, in the Trump administration, and it continued to happen when Biden was president, because it's like, I don't know, the MAGA was around, and it was like, I just didn't want anyone to think that I was MAGA. And you know, so I go out of, I'm not going to say I go out of my way and lie or anything like that, but I make a real effort when I'm out in public to be kind and friendly. And I've always been the kind of person that, you know, if I think you're wearing a cute little top, I'm going to tell you, hey, that's a cute top. I love your purse, or you look really great today. Because I know that that, you know, it makes people feel good. It makes me feel good when people, you know, strangers are kind to me. So I think it's important to be kind to people. And so I also add in that, you know, I'm not MAGA. You know, like, usually MAGA aren't overly kind. And so, at least in my experience, unless it's to other white people. So, you know, I don't know. I hate even talking about this, because but it's like, here I am, a white woman, and I don't want any, I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm not looking for anyone to hold my hand. It's just that, you know, as a white woman in the world who's very progressive and pragmatically progressive and liberal, I feel concerned, because so many white fucking people and white women voted for Donald Trump. And I feel like, please don't mistake me for them. You know, don't. Yeah. I'm not one of those people. And so many of my girlfriends in my past were for him. I don't know how they voted this time around, but I know three of them. Were they all blonde? They were all blonde. They were all blonde white women who voted for him. And I dumped them. As soon as I found out, I was like, can't be a friend anymore. And that was it. Yeah. And that was in 2016. And, you know, I don't know. I'm going off into a tangent here, but it just makes me feel fucking awful. And I don't like that I feel this way about my country. And I'm not necessarily going to ask you unless you feel like talking about it, but I think about black women specifically, and I think, I can't even imagine, you know, whether you're Mexican and you're dealing with any kind of immigration. I don't know how far he's going to go and what he's going to do. So it's like, I have friends that are Mexican. I have friends that are, you know, I have Asian friends, and I don't know exactly what everyone's thinking and how they're, you know, right now, nothing's happening. But as we move into the new year, we're going to start seeing shit. And I can't even imagine what it fucking feels like. I fucking bought pepper spray. I've never had pepper spray in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, luckily, I think this is probably true for both of us. I didn't have any friends that I had to end our friendship over this. Like, all of my friends are in the same space that we're working in right now. They're in politics, or they're activists, or they're organizers, or they write, you know, they're writers in the same space. So luckily I haven't had that problem. And of course in my family I haven't really had that problem either. So I don't envy anyone who has to cut people off they've known for a really long time.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I would have a problem with that. And I'm saying that as someone who's never had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a distant relative, you know, distant in-law, I'll say that, who I heard did vote for Trump in 2016. And luckily, they're so distant that I've never had to see this person since then. And if they ended up, you know, finding themselves in my life somehow, you know, over for dinner, I would be very clear. I don't want you around my family.
Mm-hmm.
If that ever happened. Yeah. Right. I would not feel safe with my children being around someone who voted for this person.
Yeah. Yeah, it just makes it, it's everything is different. And I've said this so many times on my show, but I had the opportunity to live in communist Soviet Russia when I was 12. And while I know the United States isn't going to turn into Soviet Russia, I do think we're going to see more of a correlation of current Russia. It'll be closer to that than it would be Soviet Russia. But what that showed me is how easily a nation can be frightened. And so many Americans have not had that experience. they do not. And I lived there. It's one thing to go visit a country that's third world or, you know, run by a fascist. And, you know, if you're going to go to South America, if you're going to go to Brazil, you know, and see the sights and whatnot, that's a different experience than living there or living in a place like communist Russia. And when I was living in Russia, my experience was, now granted, those people had never known democracy, but I don't think it matters, because it won't take long if this country, you know, and it could, not if, I'm going to say when this country devolves into whatever it's going to become, you know, if the United States military or any kind of, you know, law enforcement is part of the intimidation process, you know, people love to say over my dead body, but, you know, put it in a real life situation. And when you've got a family to feed, you're going to comply, because you're putting your own family and your own, you know, personal experience over your big mouth on what you're going to say on Twitter or something like that, and going, oh, I'm going to fight. But it's like, yeah, well, when the man comes with a gun, or, you know, when the threat of arrest happens, are you going to be that defiant, or are you going to go along because you just want to eat and have a job and pay for your shit? And, right. And that's the thing. People comply. So, and it's like Americans just don't know this. They've never had it. It's like, God, it makes me so angry. You know, did you ever see the movie, Don't Look Up?
Oh, yes.
You know, Leonardo DiCaprio said, we had everything we needed. And that just keeps running through my head. You know, it's like, oh my God, we had everything. And I think it was in 2020. I don't remember when she said it. Maybe it was when she was inaugurated. But Kamala Harris pointed out, you know, democracy is not a given. It's something that we have to fight for all the time. And Americans just lost their way. Yes, you're right. The gutting of the Voting Rights Act had a huge part to play. But there's all these people in this country who have just, who have taken democracy for granted, and they have no idea. They have no fucking idea. And it's extremely depressing. And no. I don't know. So, I mean, are you going to, you're going to continue to do your podcast, I assume?
I think I have to, right? I mean, the whole point, I started it, you know, to, you know, lift up women's voices who were in leadership, and I wanted to educate people about things like tariffs, about, you know, climate change, mm-hmm, right? And probably, I should probably do a better job of getting my voice out there more, because more people need to hear this. So yes, I'm going to do it as long as I can.
Yeah, and I mean, as you see, as everybody sees, and as you see, most of the focus of what we've been talking today has been about how we're dealing with it, how we're feeling with it, as opposed to, okay, this person's going to be nominated, like, you know, Kimberly Guilfoyle's going to be the ambassador to Greece. I don't even know what to fucking say about that. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that, and about how, I guess, Don Jr. has a new girlfriend now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people know this about Kimberly Guilfoyle, but she, you know, she was an attorney, and she was, mm-hmm, actually, I think, a pretty decent one, you know, before she got entangled with the Trump family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she prosecuted some high profile cases, you know, and somehow she got involved with the family. And, you know, Don Jr. And I just don't really know what happened to her as a person and as a woman who used to kind of do good things, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, she was with Gavin Newsom for a while. So
exactly. You know, yeah, they were married, right?
Yeah.
So they were married. And there's actually this really funny story. It's on Wikipedia, actually, about Kimberly Guilfoyle. She was an attorney at the same time that Kamala Harris is running for district attorney.
Wow.
And she made a public statement about Kamala Harris not being welcoming to her. I don't know what that meant, but apparently Kamala Harris, you know, didn't like her way back then. Mm-hmm. You know, she saw something that we didn't see,
yeah,
right? You know, and I'm not really sure what she'll do as ambassador to Greece, but it's just really interesting that, you know, Trump is getting away with all this nepotism. You know, he's giving his children, you know, positions, and his, you know, his friends and his, you know, his, his, you know, son-in-law, the father of his son-in-law are getting really important positions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though Kimberly Guilfoyle isn't going to end up being his daughter-in-law because, you know, she's broken up with Don Jr. and he's broken up with her, you know, she still is like family, I would guess,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's funny, I was thinking about that. You just reminded me. He didn't have to give her that position as ambassador to Greece. He didn't have to nominate. And I wonder why he did that.
Yeah.
Right? Why he did that? Does she know things? I'm going into my, right, you know, conspiracist mind. Does she know things about the family that he doesn't want to come out?
Right. Yeah, maybe. God only knows. I mean, I think it goes both ways, though. You know, they all have compromise on each other. I go back to in September of 2020, I interviewed Noel Casler and he spilled all kinds of tea on my show. I think it was the first time he was talking about all this stuff publicly, but he did talk about, I think it was, there was some kind of apartment in New York. This, you know, he was on The Apprentice and he had signed an NDA, but I guess he was just like, fuck the NDA. And he just started saying a bunch of shit. He was not sued for it, but he said that there was this apartment in New York and it was run by the Russians and it was all about human sex trafficking. So you'd have all these young girls in, and then the people like Donald Trump and people, you know, whether it's Lindsey Graham or whoever, you know, and it's not just, I'm going to say it's not only Republicans, but just, let's just say high profile people, whether they were political or not. Would go and have and basically rape young girls, and these young girls who were trafficked, and then there would be cameras in these rooms, and then boom, there's, you know, compromat. You've got compromat on someone and now you own them. And evidently, according to Noel Casler, this was like well known and not even a secret, really. And I think that, you know, we look at Jeffrey Epstein, and I think that my theory here is that the stuff that, you know, that everybody was talking about, those fucking PP tapes, no one's going to give a shit if escorts or prostitutes are peeing on Donald. No one's going to care. But I think that the what would make more sense is if they had compromising, you know, pictures of Donald with, you know, he was with Epstein. Who knows? Epstein could have done it, you know, gotten compromat on him. I don't know. All these people, they're not really friends. They're friends in public, but then they all have, you know, they all have dirt on each other to keep each other from talking about shit. So it's like, you know, we know this, that with Epstein, it was awful and there was human sex trafficking and they were children. We also know before Donald Trump became president, there was a girl who testified, although she backed out of it because she got death threats, but said when she was, you know, 15 or something like that, he basically raped her. I don't want to say it was not consensual. So you can't say it was consensual. It's basically rape. It's violent rape. And if that were on video, so it's like, this all goes to say that with Kimberly Guilfoyle, maybe she had stuff on them. Maybe they have stuff on her. It's so convoluted and disgusting that all of these people are gross. Yeah. But you're right. Like, they didn't have to give it to her. So I wonder what's the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's not loyal to anyone. The only person he's loyal to is, you know, Ivanka, his daughter,
right?
You know, he really doesn't care. He has no loyalty to anyone, so I'm not really sure why he would have given her that position, especially since she broke up with his with his son, or his son broke up with her brother. So, you know, that's just,
you know, or maybe she really just, you know, maybe she kissed his ass enough to where he, because we all know Donald loves to be complimented, and, you know, maybe she just played that with him, and he had a soft side, you know, a soft part of him that was like, okay, well, let's just give this to her.
But so did Laura Loomer.
Yeah, right? That's true. Although, but Laura Loomer was so egregiously offensive that I think everybody was like, dude, you got to stay away from her.
I mean, how much more egregiously offensive can you get than Trump himself?
I know.
Right? Do you remember
the
last days of his campaign and what he did to that microphone?
I know. But he's got a cult following. And you know, I mean, she's got a cult following, but not the size of his. And,
true,
you know, he's the leader. He is the charismatic leader of the MAGA movement. And, you know, I mean, she was just desperately clinging on and trying to, use him to advance herself. And I think toward the end, because she said such disgusting things. I mean, he says disgusting things, but I mean, she was straight up, I'm going to be racist, I'm going to be anti-Semitic, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. And, you know, he does everything in cloaked language, but she's right out there. And I think that he was advised to stay away from her. It'll be interesting to see if she comes back in the picture. And you know, I mean, there was all that speculation that they were having an affair. And I find that hard to believe. I'm not going to say it didn't happen, but I just find it hard to believe. I don't think it wasn't about affair with them, because I think that it was more about, and this is just me speculating, I think she knew how to stroke his ego more than his penis. Like, I don't think she stroked his penis. I think she stroked his ego. And he really liked that. And, you know, maybe he's also, you know, she's also not the type of woman that we're used to seeing him with. He likes these trophy types, and she's not a trophy type. She's not the traditional, I mean, I don't want to go around and say how I think Melania is so beautiful, because I don't. But look, I mean, in a general sense, yes, she's a beautiful woman. Maybe she's not your type. Maybe you don't find her attractive. But in a, like I said, in the general sense, she is considered to be a beautiful woman.
Right.
But, you know, and Laura Loomer isn't. And so Trump seems to like women who are considered traditionally beautiful. And that doesn't mean he wouldn't be attracted to somebody who isn't traditionally beautiful. But I honestly think it's just about the ego stroking. You know, everybody wants that to touch that power. And I think she knew how. And, you know, I mean, he's clearly, his mind is going, you know, his brain is fucking dying. And he's talking about Arnold Palmer's penis, and he's jerking off a microphone. And, you know, and and what I have to say about all of that is that dementia and Alzheimer's and all those kinds of, I don't know, afflictions or diseases or whatever, oftentimes cause people to be inappropriate sexually, and that might have, you know, be what's playing into that, his obsession with talking about fucking penises. And, you know, I mean, it might just be that who was it, there was somebody, I don't, was it George W. Bush, I mean, I'm sorry, George H. W. Bush, the father, I think yeah. Wasn't he sexually inappropriate with somebody?
I can't remember.
Think so. But he was really old. And I think he was like in a wheelchair or something. And you know, I'm not going to say, oh, it's fine that he was. But I think it was because he was going through the dementia. And I just think that, you know, that happens. So, you know, I mean, I think we're seeing that with Donald Trump. So, I mean, I don't know that. I just don't buy that they had an affair. I don't think they were having sex. I just don't think they were having sex. I think that it was more about her telling him what he wanted to hear, and he loved it. And, you know, I think she also played up the whole affectionate, you know, like physical affection, being close to him and just making him feel like the big daddy. And he loves that shit. So, you know, I mean, that's just like, again, that's my speculation. I have no proof. I'm just guessing. But that's where I saw that. And I don't know if she's going to come back. I don't know if she's going to come back into the picture once he, you know, I mean, there's no down. He's going to be the president. It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. So we'll see.
You know, I do have to say, though, Kimberly, that this turn in the conversation has taken me out of my holiday happy place.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to have to go stare at my Christmas tree for a while.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, though, regarding the compromising tapes, you know, even if there is a compromising tape, I don't know if there is, I'm not sure, but just the allegation that there was sexual impropriety used to be enough. Mm-hmm. Even if minors weren't involved.
Right.
That used to be enough. I would argue that the moment that we elected this person after the Access Hollywood tapes, that was all out the window.
Mm-hmm.
All out the window.
Yeah, it really was. And it's such a shame, because I remember telling my boyfriend in October when that happened, he, you know, I was living in California and he was on a trip back east, and I was like, dude, he's toast. He, you know, because Bob hadn't seen the Access Hollywood video. And we all thought that was it. That's going to kill the campaign. And it didn't. So the rest, as they say, is history. And yeah, it is depressing. And that's why it's like, I don't know where I'm going to be focusing moving forward. I think one of the areas that I'm going to try to focus on is, okay, what can we do? What is it that Joanne, average citizen, can do? Whether it's calling, your local or even, your local school board, getting involved with that. If it's putting pressure on elected officials, if it's, anything doing with community organizing. But it's going, if we're going to overcome this, it's literally going to have to be more than I'm going to go to work and do everything that I've always done in the past, but I'm going to say fuck Donald Trump on social media. That's not resistance. No. It's just not. And I think that we have gotten used to, we were fortunate enough in that first term that, because even though a lot of horrible things occurred, obviously there was some of the resistance did come from courts and lawsuits and whatnot. And that's what Mark Elias is saying is the number one thing that is in our corner is the judiciary. But that scares me because, again, if it goes to the Supreme Court, I don't trust it. The Supreme Court hasn't always voted in favor of Trump. But at the same time, we're in a new paradigm right now. So I don't know how that works out. But, it is going to be from the people. And I think the people are the ones right now who we need to recognize the power we do have. And we need to kind of get out of our little comfort bubble of, again, here's this funny meme about Donald Trump's hair and I'm resisting. It's just not enough. So
I'm a little bothered by those too. I know people are just trying, having fun.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I think what's really uncomfortable for people right now is that they know the people who are still in this place, well, we have to fight this. We know intellectually that we have to fight this. We just don't know what shape mm-hmm. that fight is mm-hmm. going to take.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what's going to happen after January 20th. We just don't know, right? Yeah. Like, on what fronts will we have to fight?
Yeah. Exactly. And that's, I'm going to end this just by saying, I'm not going to name names, but there's a couple that come to the top of my mind of social media influencers who are really good. I've gotten a little bit more sarcastic in the last couple of weeks, because initially I wasn't feeling sarcastic at all. I was just feeling completely defeated and completely miserable. But, my humor is coming back. But I feel like I want to dedicate, if I'm going to pay attention to politics, I do want to dedicate some time in educating people, like, okay, well, here's where you can go do this thing and here's some action to take. But there are certain accounts that are so busy telling everybody how many followers they have on Blue Sky and how proud they are of their followers. Let me just tell you this really funny thing about Donald Trump's hair or whatever. And it's like, it's okay to have occasional breaks in your messaging on here's what you can do. But if all you're doing is bragging about your follower account and, posting snarky content so that people will like your shit and follow you, I have completely lost respect for all of those people. And again, I'm not going to name names. I'm not here to start fights with people. I just don't think that, like, I'm questioning my own value as far as what I have to offer anybody. And so when I see people out there going, I'm not going to fucking change a goddamn thing, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, pay attention to me. It's making me sick. I just I can't do it. I just can't do it. So anyway, I just have to throw that in there. And I don't mean to sound like I'm bitter or I'm trying to make anybody do what I do, but that's just where I'm coming from. And I know I'm not alone because I've seen Angry Black Lady talk about it too. And it's like, she's just fucking over it. And it's like, yes, I agree.
Yeah. So. Being bitter is a normal reaction right now. Do what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, Jen, I'm sorry that you are now having to go back and stare at your Christmas tree and maybe make 35 more cheesecakes or something like that. I understand where you're coming from, and I wish this wasn't the conversation we were having, but unfortunately it is, and I appreciate you being here and having it with me. You're so incredibly intelligent, and I highly recommend that everybody listening to the show goes over, signs up. Okay, so before we go, please tell everybody, like, not only where to find you online, but, like, how do they, you know, where do they sign up for your podcast and all of that stuff?
So it's electorette.com. You can go to electorette.com/podcast if you want to listen to some of the latest episodes. I'm on hiatus right now. I'll pick up again at the, you know, in the new year. But if you look at the podcast, I did a lot of, you know, election coverage where I talked to a lot of your favorite representatives, like, you know, Lauren Underwood and lots of other folks that you'll probably love hearing from. And then on social media, I'm, you know, Jen Taylor Skinner, or I think it's J. Taylor Skinner. I think you can put that in the show notes. I'm Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Not really posting that much on Twitter, but, you know, yeah, that's how you can find me. And you can find me at the bottom of a cheesecake pan. Always.
Well, I do have on the graphic and then on, you know, I have a bunch of your links in the show notes, but just FYI, because I do have a graphic that I put up. So if you see that graphic, I didn't include the Blue Sky ending to it, but if you just write in the, you know, at J, it's like J, what is it?
J, what is it?
I don't remember what it is, but either way, it's this, it's similar to the one that's on Twitter. So if you just start the same, you know, the one that I put on there, J. Yeah. Taylor Skinner.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
J. Taylor. Taylor. It's J. Taylor Skinner.
Okay,
Taylor,
so it's Skinner. J. Taylor Skinner. If you just search for that on Blue Sky, you'll show up immediately. So that's how you find it. But I put up the Twitter handle on the graphic. So FYI for all the people that are still listening to our lovely conversation. But once again, thank you so much. And, you know, I hope that you have a lovely holiday. I truly do, with your family. And then we're just going to have to brace ourselves.
Yeah, no, thank you. Enjoy the holidays, Kimberly. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.